Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This is it. The time has come.
Get in the ring and go the distance with Fight Night.
And Rockwell puts him down.
With Adam Catterall and Gareth A. Davies.
You're better than that.
On TalkSport, the home of boxing.
Welcome to the Fight Night podcast from Talk Sport. I'm Adam Catterall. Pleasure to be with you. If you are not a subscriber to this podcast, what are you playing at? Come on, you know what to do. Hit the subscribe button on iTunes. You can also get us on the Talk Sport website if you need any Android feeds. We are here every single Monday, bringing you closer to the fight sports game with some of the biggest names in the game coming to join us on our Fight Night show every single Saturday night. And I'm going to prove that to you right now. As you know, coming up in October, we've got a big fight between two big names with loads of nostalgic undertones. It is, of course, Chris Eubank Jr. versus Conor Benn. Everybody seems to be talking about it at the moment, so we thought we'd speak to one of them. Conor Benn had a bit of spare time on a Saturday night whilst he was chilling out in the jacuzzi, so we decided to give him a call and get him on the show. We started by talking about weight.
As far as I'm concerned, the weight was always fine. The weight was, suggested to my team by Team Eubanks, and we just agreed the weight. Obviously, me jumping up two weights division is, it's a big jump, So for him to come down an extra 3 pounds, there should be no problem, really, when you look at it like that. That's not our problem. If his dad has an issue with him firing me at that weight, then that's an issue they need to sort out. That has nothing to do with me. It's completely irrelevant to me. All I know is I signed a contract to fire at this weight for this much at this time, and I agreed on all fronts.
We spoke to Tony a couple of weeks ago, and he said near enough the same thing, that the weight of 157 was suggested by Team Eubank, and even the rehydration limit was suggested by Team Eubank. When them figures came in your way, bearing in mind that obviously he is two weights above you, and he's fought actually three weights above you at one point, were you surprised that those suggestions came back your way?
Not at all. I mean, I'd fight him anyway. So it's when
not from his point of view, from him suggesting those stipulations.
No. Oh, I was surprised that he would take the fight. That was forget everything else, all the details. I wasn't surprised at the weight. Obviously, then he really wants the fight. If he's saying to us he can make that weight, then that's great. I wasn't expecting him to drop below 160. So the fact that we've agreed the weight, I believe he's a man of his word, as he says he is. He will make the weight. It makes it even with me jumping up two weight divisions, ish.
Given where you're currently at in your career, are you surprised that this is the next one for you?
Yeah, of course I am, man. I knew Adam.
Yeah, mate, listen, absolutely. I was enjoying what you were doing at 147, and like I've said to you on many occasions, the progress that you've made over the last 24 months in particular has really got a lot of people excited of where this journey could go at 147. So when the shout came in,
I agree. I'm not writing off 147 at all, but one reason why I've taken this fight is you can't pass up on an opportunity like this.
I get that.
I do you know what I mean? The attitude of this fight, I mean, it's sold out in 12 minutes. The interest in this fight is, it has an aura about it, it has a vibe about the fight, you know, that I don't think fighting for a world title can give me, in terms of the magnitude of the fight. It got it so many generations. How can I then go, I'm going to have another fight with, I don't know who, Kito Ibarra. Keith Thurman was struggling to make the fight. Offered Jose Ramirez the fight. You know, he wanted Ugas. You know, so none of these fights were materialising. So if they're not materialising, I wanted to stay active. But then I'm not going to then just fight another fight to get me through to one of them big names. You know, I wanted a big fight next. The world title belts were all held up. Ugas, Thurman, all them, none of them were taking the fight at the time. So it's like, the Eubanks fight grew legs very quickly, which was a surprise to me. And here we are. You know, for me, time is something I won't get back. So for me, staying active is so important to me. Building momentum is, you know, I think that's just really helped me in my career.
Do you rate him as a boxer?
Do I rate him? I rate him as a fighter, yeah.
Ah. See, the choice of language there was slightly different. Fighter and boxer are two totally different things, aren't they? So you admire the set of stones that he's got on him and how far he'll go during a 12-round period. But from a technical aspect, you're unsure where he's at.
I'm unsure. I think it's hard, man, because if you look at my career and you look at his career, you look at my trajectory and look at his, you look at where he was at when I first turned pro and now you look at me now. So I don't know why I don't see how he's improved. I don't think he's improved from all the decisions he's made, from the choice of trainers, from relocating to, you know, I think it shows in his style. You know, it's very stop-start, a very jarring style. But, you know, sometimes he gets the job done. When he steps up to someone who boxes, he's, you know, he falls short. Whereas you look at my career and there's been a constant progress. So yeah, I'm not really sure where he's at.
Do you have to change anything that you've been doing in order to compensate for the extra weight going into this one?
I mean, making sure I don't get hit.
Yeah, that's good.
Always that's always a priority, but I'd say even more so this fight. You know, jumping up two weight divisions, it has been a massive challenge, but it's a challenge that I've really enjoyed. You know, sparring bigger guys, sparring super middles, sparring light heavies, sparring middles, and then, you know, light middles. I don't think I've actually sparred a light middle this camp yet. You know, so I've been sparring with the big boys, and it presents different challenges. I find some things easier with heavier people that I wouldn't with lighter people, but you know, it's a challenge, man. I believe, you know, that's what I thrive off.
Would you say beating Chris would be an upset?
I don't know. You tell me, Adam, because I'm getting mixed. It's the public's opinions are so mixed. It's honestly like as if people are like, I don't know. It's just really, it's really a mental one because one, you're hearing it don't go past six from my part, 4 to 6. Then you're hearing Eubanks is way too big. You've been off more than you can chew here. You know, he's just too big.
But from your point of view, for you going into this, it's win-win, isn't it?
No, man. I hate when people say that.
Why is it not?
Because it ain't no win-win. Does my record say win-win if I lost?
No, you're 100% right. So if that does happen, you can always say, then that's not my weight.
No, because I don't come up with no excuses. I don't take on a fight, I don't think I can win. So for me, going, oh yeah, but you know, it's a win-win. I've got a lovely payday, you know, I jumped up two weights, you know, win-win. No, that's not how I look at this. I don't look at him and go, oh yeah, you know, every fight at this level is a risk. Thurman's a risk. Ugas is a risk. Jose Ramirez is a risk. Errol Spence, Crawford, they're all risks. So Eubanks is that risk, but I still believe I can beat him. So for me to for everyone to go, oh yeah, but you know, it's a win-win. It ain't no win-win. You know, I'm a fighter, and losing a fight is losing a fight, irrelevant of how much I got in my bank account, irrelevant of what weight is that I lost to another man. If you get my perspective.
100% I do, yeah. And also, as well as that, regarding the nostalgic element of this fight coming together with your fathers that obviously twice danced in the 1990s, do you feel added pressure going into the fight?
Do you know what? It's weird, Adam, because I don't feel no pressure at all. And then you talk to me, I talked to a 25-year-old, 0-2 sellout in 12 minutes. Why do I not feel nervous? Why do I not feel pressure? Why do I not feel the pressure of the occasion? I don't feel a thing. And I can only put that down to how nervous and anxious and fearful I was at the start of my career walking out to big arenas when I wasn't ready.
What was the face-off, the sit-down like, from your point of view?
Sit-down? He's a strange individual. that's all I
can. I just say, by the way, wonderful choice of attire, by the way, going with the vest and glasses. I like that, man. That's a good vibe. I obviously could not pull that off, but well done to you.
Do you know what? It was quite hot in there, and you know, I was ready to scrap. So
you were up for it. You looked like you were ready.
Yeah. So for me, it's I was just ready to go, man. You know, so for me, it weren't all golden glitter. It was straight to business. But the face off, I mean, I expected nothing less. He was coming out of what he was coming out with, saying things like the father figure and all that. It is all just rubbish, and it is all just PR. You know, when I get in there, I'm straight down to business. And what I say, I mean, I genuinely mean. I don't try and play mind games or try and do this or try and do that, because it means nothing. It's all rubbish. It's a good selling point, but, you know, for me, when I get in there, it's down to business.
The big fights are coming thick and fast to TalkSport. This week coming, we're going to be in Manchester for Joe Joyce versus Joseph Parker. So we thought we'd catch up with one of them on the show at the weekend. Joseph Parker was on to talk about the prospect of fighting Joe Joyce and what it means for him going forward.
Camp is lonely because you're in there putting in the work, but you have your team around you. And when you add these sort of opportunities to create content, it just gives you a bit more, it's fun. It's the sort of fun part of it. And we do have fun. We go bowling, we play instruments, we watch movies and all that. But it's just another one of those things that you can add to the fun factor of camp.
Good evening, Joe.
Good evening.
One of the things that's come out this week is that Andy Lee is not allowing you and Tyson Fury to spar each other. And I want to know why. And two, as the big Gypsy King putting in the hard work ahead of December the 3rd already?
I'm not sure why we're not able to spar. I mean, we do a lot of body sparring, and it's like body sparring is hard. Like, we smash each other to the body, but we haven't really done the full sort of contact sparring. Not sure why, but we had sparring partners in camp, though, who gave us great work to prepare for Joyce. And Tyson is training here and there. He's busy doing a lot of other things, but he does join in a few sessions here and there during the week. Well, when we're in camp,
Have we not heard, though, you know, that this fight is being signed for December the 3rd? Is it? Has he not got down and dirty already? Then,
no, I haven't heard anything. I mean,
you're a good man, Joe. You're batting him off. Well done.
Yeah, I wish. Listen, if I had some news, I'll be the one to break it. Imagine breaking the news.
Listen. From your point of view, this fight was verbally agreed. Obviously, no contract signed originally, and we saw that it was announced last time Tyson was out against Dillian White. We all got extremely excited, and then, of course, you took your path with your new promotional deal and television deal. Fantastic from that point of view. But then there was obviously a point of back and forth of whether this fight was going to happen or not. How delighted are you that in a world where so many excuses are made from promoters and broadcasters as to why fights can't happen, that your promoter and Joe's promoter have managed to come together and the television companies have managed to come together to get this fight on, because it's a fight that the fans are absolutely thirsty for.
I believe this is a great fight. You've got number one and number two fighting each other. And I am very delighted that all the parties have come to play. They've all come together to make this fight happen. And I know there's a lot of fights that haven't been able to be made because of the broadcasting and promoters and managers. But I'm very happy that we're able to lock in this fight. Well, it's been talked about, and it's a fight that I feel will give a lot of action in this fight. I think we're both going to come to fight.
The ramifications of it as well are incredible. For people that haven't been keeping up to date with the heavyweight division and maybe only concentrating on Tyson and Alexander Usyk and Anthony and their narrative, the winner of this fight is prime for the WBO, because that's what this fight is basically all about. And if Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua do have a fight, and maybe multiple fights, that will leave Alexander Usyk without dance partners. And if you're the number one with the WBO, you're in prime position to be fighting for a world title in 2023.
Prime position, but it's the winner. You know, this fight, it's all about winning. And for me, my plan is to win next weekend, and then my plan is I'm locked in for a rematch clause, which I think is totally rubbish. There should be no rematch clauses if you're not champion.
Agree.
But I think they're a bit doubtful that something might happen, or I might beat them, and they need this for safety. So I have to beat him in next weekend, which I will. I'll beat him again in December. Then, listen, when I'm at number one, I'd love the opportunity to fight anyone. And if it's Usyk, it'll be great. It'll be a great fight. But Joe Joyce, he's the man that I want to smash.
Throwing ahead, say you win against, when you win against Joe Joyce, there's talk at the moment, if Fury and Joshua fight each other, Joe, there's talk about Usyk looking to fight Deontay Wilder at the moment, early-ish next year. Wilder obviously has to beat Robert Hellenius as well, coming up in October, November, isn't it? In November. That presumably there's an option there that you might fight the winner of Wilder and Usyk, and they're both guys we need to see you in against.
I would fight absolutely anyone, Gareth. Anyone and everyone. But there's no point for me talking about those fights and beat this guy in front of me. So until I beat this guy, I would love to fight anyone and put me in the ring with anyone. I'm keen to fight anyone. And I want to be one of those fighters who would get in the ring and fight anyone, because as a fighter, you don't want to make excuses. You want to challenge yourself against the best in the world.
Okay. You know, how do you beat this guy then? Because he said he doesn't want to be hit as much in this fight. How do you beat, without obviously giving game plan away, we know what Joe is, we know what you are. How do you beat Joe Joyce?
It's about how I turn up. I mean, Joe Joyce has one style. I come forward, good engine, throw punches, and put on the pressure. But it's how I want to show up to this fight that really matters. It's about me. I got a good game plan with Andy. Andy is a master at game plans. And yeah. I think, you know, it's about being smart, but also mixing it up. And, you know, he wants to avoid being punched. But how can you avoid, you know, what has he been working on to avoid getting punched? I don't know. Like, you know, is it movement? Because I haven't really seen a lot of, you know, faster movement or faster punches, or you know what I mean?
The only fight where he was effective was using that jab against Daniel Dubois, where he kept him off him, to be
very
honest.
Very good jab he used in that fight, yeah.
Regarding conditioning, Joe, have you done anything different going into this fight? And listen, you're always in top condition. Your hand speed's electric. You've got great footwork as well. But as you've just mentioned there, with Joe, he has got a great engine on him, and he does get quicker, if we could call it that, as fights do progress. So have you had to change anything regarding your strength and conditioning in order to plan for that 12-round onslaught next weekend?
Well, I've kept the strength conditioning the same, and I've actually broke some personal best in camp with the weights. Also, there's circuits that Andy's added into camp, but also the sparring. We've lifted the level of sparring, but also the number of rounds that we've done in camp. So, going into this fight, there's absolutely no excuse. I'm strong, I'm fit, I'm healthy, and I'm ready to go. And if he beats me on a day, that means he's better than me, and I have a lot more work to do, but he ain't going to beat me.
I can tell, right? I don't know about you, Gareth, but there seems to be an extra spring in your step or an extra spring in your voice as we're speaking to you right now. In the past, of course, it's been there and you've been excited about particular fights, but there seems to be a little bit of something extra this time, Joe. Am I off with that?
Can I say this as well? Winter is coming. The heavyweights
are
gathering.
Have you gone Game of Thrones?
I have gone Game of Thrones. Winter is coming. The heavyweights are gathering. The clouds are gathering. Ruiz has just won. Wilder's just about to win, I believe. Two of the greatest heavyweights in the world right now are going at it next week, and we are there a few feet from, for Live for Talk Sport, a few feet from you and Joe Joyce doing this. We are so excited. Do you feel it?
I feel it. And I felt it. Listen, as soon as you started talking, the winter is coming. Oh, that's mate, it. That just got me right there and then and there. But the passion I have for boxing has come back. And then I have a lot more of an understanding of myself as a fighter, and I was understanding the training and just the whole camp life. And I'm enjoying it and loving it. And there's no reason why to enjoy fight week and enjoy the fight that's ahead, because that's the reward for all the hard work we put in.
We kind of forget that you became world champion relatively young in your years, and therefore it's only now that many would class that you're starting to come in to your prime. Do you think, obviously, that length of time has given you a deeper appreciation of the level that you're at and where you're at and the things that once you've achieved that you want to get back to those levels once again?
Yes, I've achieved all those things, good things, at a young age, but I didn't really appreciate it at the time. But now... now that I'm a bit more mature and this passion is a lot stronger and I'm more motivated and driven, you know, when I do get the chance to fight for it again, I'm gonna keep it and I'm gonna stay there as long as I can.
Obviously, you are based quite extensively in the UK now. How are you enjoying as well the way that the British fan has taken to you? They seem to have adopted you as a British citizen, don't you? You're one of the guys up in Morecambe there, down the old... I'm not saying that you're down the old fish and chip shop, mate, but I'm sure that they see you in the cafes and all that type of thing.
How did you know I was at the chip shop?
you seem to have been adopted by the locals.
Yeah, they call me around here Morecambe Joe. I feel like I'm at home here.
Yeah,
and the longer I stayed, like, I got my local cafe that I go to, my local Sainsbury that I shop at. I just feel like I'm at home, and everyone shows a lot of love. And I'm honestly grateful and thankful to all the people that welcomed me into this country and made me feel like I'm at home.
Yeah. Well, we enjoy having you here, mate.
And the fabric.
Listen, you're always a fantastic value on this particular show, but more importantly, you're always fantastic value when you step through the ropes. And we're looking forward to not only experiencing you on the microphone this week, but experiencing, witnessing you doing your thing once again next Saturday night, mate. Enjoy the week.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
Cheers, Joe.
There you go. Josie Parker, who will be in action next week, live on TalkSport. Come and join us from 8 o'clock. We're in Manchester at the arena as he takes on Joe Joyce. As he mentioned there, it's number one and number two in the WBO. The winner of that fight will be in prime position for a shot at that WBO title, which is currently held by Alexander Usyk. The winner of the fight next weekend will, at some point in the next 12 months, be fighting for the heavyweight championship of the world. So make sure you tune into TalkSport next week for that. Now, you may have heard us talk a little bit about the prospect of fighting other heavyweights following Joe Joyce at the weekend. Of course, he's not overlooking Joe Joyce. But one of the heavyweights that we did mention was Deontay Wilder. We had his manager, Shelley Finkel, on the show at the weekend. Can I say it's fantastic to hear Deontay recently giving interviews, speaking so well, in a great frame of mind, and obviously gearing towards his fight with Helenius in the back of... obviously, the conclusion of the trilogy with Tyson Fury. We all wanted to see him again, and it's great news for the heavyweight division that he's made that decision to continue.
Yes, it shocked me. Not that he was going to continue, but that the way he did it. Jay, Malik, and I were at dinner with him the night before his statue was presented. And at the statue, he announced he was going to continue his career. And they asked him, who you're fighting next and what are you doing? And he said, oh, ask my manager, Shelley. I had no idea what he was doing and when. And they came over to me and they said, well, what's your plans? I said, you can guess anyone. I said, I didn't know any more than you did. He didn't tell us last night that, you know. So we laughed, and when I told Deontay that, he had a sly smile. And he's training hard. Everything's going well. We have to take Helenius very serious because he's a serious opponent. And after that, there's a world of options for Deontay.
There are, Shelley. Obviously, you and I go back a long way. And for the for our listeners tonight who may not have heard or don't know that obviously you were manager of Mike Tyson and advised him in his legalese years ago as well, and were around that whole extraordinary era in the heavyweight division. One of the things I wanted to ask you about tonight was when you look at Deontay, and it's something I've said, and I think Adam might have said it a lot recently, we see when Deontay Wilder has come over to the UK, he is like a superstar over here. Genuinely now, he's mobbed. There are enormous fights. He's mentioned Tyson Fury again, a fourth fight with Tyson Fury this week. There are enormous fights for him in the UK. Dillian White, Anthony Joshua, Tyson Fury again, Joe Joyce, Daniel Dubois. The list goes on and on and on, not to mention Alexander Usyk. That could take place here and generate interest. Have you talked to Deontay about being on this side of the world and having fights over here?
Yes. In the past and recent, he loves the UK. He always felt that the UK fans gave him so much love that he has a deep, deep feeling toward the fans and the country. And, let me just back up a second. It's come out a few times by Eddie that I avoided him. That's partially true. Well, it's wholly true. We have a fight coming up with Helenius. Eddie called me. Well, he didn't actually. He emailed me. Can we talk? I have some big thing for Deontay. Right now, we have the Helenius fight. That's all we need to concentrate on. Because if something went wrong there, nothing else would be. Mm. And if it goes right, it'll all get worked out. And I felt if I got on a call with Eddie, the next thing you would be on the call to me, Gareth. Oh, did you and Eddie talk and this and that? So I said, Deontay, what do you think? Al, what do you think? And they said, let's just get this fight out of the way. And sure enough, instead of saying, boy, Shelley and I had a good... Shelley didn't even talk to me. The thing is, he also has this feeling that I dislike Eddie. No, I don't always agree with him. We're on opposite sides because he has a fighter that will hopefully be an opponent for one of my guys, in this case, Deontay, and nothing of the sort. Barry and I... we go back about 30, 40 years, and it's always been very cordial. And the Eddie thing, look, he's been around not as long as he thinks he has, but he's done some really exciting, good things. So I give him credit for that. And when it comes time to make a deal, it'll get done or not. I mean, it got done with Klitschko when it was to happen, and now, he seems to be on a path to fight Fury. I wish him well. The other day, we got a message that Usyk will fight us if we don't, Joshua goes the route of Fury. Yeah, we're open to that. Mm. We're not opposed to that at all. And if not, there's Ruiz, there's several other options. In our mind, until the Fury thing came, I was thinking that after the fight with Helenius, if everything went right, we would be talking, Eddie and I. But, things happen.
Fascinating. So what you're saying there is that, you need to get Helenius out of the way. It's great that Deontay's back. But he's going to be in the market for those huge fights, Fury, Usyk, Joshua. We want to see those fights, Shelley. The boxing world wants to see those fights.
I agree. It's a funny thing. I've discussed it recently with, you know, our rest of the team. And it may never happen. It may not be the result I wanted. But deep in my heart, I believe Deontay could beat Fury. He hasn't shown it. He hasn't done it the way, you know, it could have been. And Fury executed his plan the way he should have. I have a lot of respect for Fury. He knows when I see him, him and I, you know, are very even warm, because I go back with the Klitschko days. I go back when he was having his problems. And the man has conquered a lot and risen to the top. And I do believe at this moment he is the top. And my hat's off to him. He is a great showman. He may drive you reporters crazy by putting out one story and changing it before you write it.
Exactly.
but otherwise, he's a breath of fresh air. You got things going. It's, you know, people are talking. Since the days of Tyson, the heavyweight division hasn't been this exciting. You just named about five, six, you know, potential opponents. There's a couple of good fights coming up on your shore. The Parker-Joyce fight is interesting. The what Daniel will do next. The Fury-Joshua, if that gets completed. Usyk, whatever. You know, there's just a lot going on, which is good. Aside from, I think, the welterweight division, there's nothing like that in any other division with the depth of it.
Just to finish, Mr. Finkel, do you believe, and I know that the boxing, listen, I'm asking you this because you've been there, seen it and done it and got the T-shirt. Do you believe that Deontay Wilder will fight for a heavyweight world championship within the next 12 months?
Well, let me put it this way. It should be. He should. And at this moment, based on what you and I can see out there, the most likely would be Usyk, because Fury is tied up with Joshua. And they talked about a rematch clause. I believe Fury wins that fight, but Joshua is not a foregone conclusion in my mind to lose. And I thought that he improved a lot in his last fight. I felt Robert Garcia did a lot of good things for him. And I just think that there's some inner strength of Usyk that turned it around in the 10th round. Because after the 9th, I said, boy, Joshua comes out strong. I think he'll get him. And Usyk rose to the occasion. And,
Indeed.
Yeah, and that's what makes the, you know, someone stars. Just to go a little further, I believe that boxing mirrors life in many ways. And I have a saying, life is great, just not perfect. So we have trials that we have to pass, and the greats get knocked down, but get up. The ones that don't get up are not. And I believe Usyk is one of those, from unifying the cruiserweight division to doing what he's done in the heavyweight division.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
On Friday night at the York Hall, Denzel Bentley was in action, taking care of Marcus Morrison inside four rounds, defending his British middleweight title. A fabulous display from the man from London. We got him on the show and broke into his celebratory dinner in the process.
I'm actually out at dinner, but I've stepped outside.
Good man. That's the right answer, mate. That's the right answer. Listen, last night, obviously, the fight with Marcus Morrison, it was built throughout the course of the week. It was built up quite nicely. And performance-wise, listen, you've had some wonderful performances, some great gut checks as well down the years. But last night, it just seemed a bit of a coming-of-age moment for you. Like, you felt comfortable being the champ, walking to the ring as the champ, embracing the challenges that come as the champ, and then obviously getting the job done in quick fashion against Marcus.
Yeah, no, last night I just felt like, you know, I need to start owning, you know, the position I'm in and owning, you know, the title that I have. I think earlier when I won it against Mark Heffron, it might have been a bit too early. You know, I fought him in my 13th fight because of the lockdown. You know, people were just forced to take challenges that they may have not been, you know, not necessarily ready for. But I'm not saying I wasn't ready or I was rushed, but I was just up for the challenge.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for lockdown, it might have been another year until I'd got there. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, I'm here for the second time and it's like, listen, own it this time. Own it. You're not here. You're not, this isn't no step up. They're not doing anyone, like, no one's doing you any favours. Mm. If anything, the challenger, you're doing them a favour by giving them the opportunity. And I felt like that was the decision I'm taking. Like, I'm giving you the opportunity to fight me. So, you know, this is my field. This is my home, my territory, and that's what I felt yesterday.
Listen, watching your interviews throughout the course of the week, there felt a new confidence. There felt a new maturity. The performance obviously emulated that. And listen, I want to just quickly refer back to a defeat that you suffered. Do you think that comes from the learns that you've taken from the Felix Cash fight? You seem to be just mentally different now since that fight.
Yeah, most definitely. Like I said, I can't let that happen again. So instead of soaking about it and, you know, trying to hide away from the public and, you know, trying to ignore the fact that it happened, I'm embracing the fact that it happened and what I'm going to do about it to make sure it doesn't happen again. And I think that's what I'm doing at this moment. I think, I've bounced back pretty well from it. I'm still taking tough challenges. It's not going to change me as a person. Some people take losses and, you know, they want warm-up fights or easy fights back for a little while, or confidence boosters, or they go missing for a year. I just wanted to get right back on the circuit. So, you know, my mentality is just a little bit different.
Yeah, and that's the attitude that most fans want to hear as well. That what I found, not amusing, but what I found interesting last night from Joe Gallagher and Marcus Morrison's tactic point of view is obviously they may have looked at the Felix Cash fight and thought, right, let's jump on Denzel Bentley early and see if we can catch him cold and catch him nice and early in a particular fight. From your point of view, to be able to weather that and to dish it back out and obviously come out and avail within four rounds, that now must also give you an awful amount of confidence, knowing full well that if somebody does want to come and give it me early, I'm more than capable of being able to deal with that and do my own work too.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's going to be everyone's game plan going forward. So I've got to be wary of that. You know, that's the only thing you can look at where, you know, they've seen a photo or blueprint, so to speak, of how to, you know, beat me. I think Linus tried that in my last fight as well. And yeah, instead of me getting with him, I kind of held back and tried to step on the gas later. It worked. But this time around, Martin said, look, you're going with him. Do you know what I mean? He said, listen, they're going to start fast. I want you to go with him. I trust Martin. I trust what he does. You know, what we've been working on. So that's what we've done. He started fast and I went with him and it paid off in the end.
Being a crowd pleaser is always a fantastic fire that is lit under the fans watching. Obviously, we've got super middleweights fighting tonight, Canelo Alvarez and Gennady Golovkin. Middleweights originally, that's where they performed at their very best and where they had their first two fights. One of the things, apart from those who are elite fighters, you have twice held the British middleweight title now. What do you think about the way those elite fighters are earning money, how YouTubers are earning money, and how you're having to really ply your trade in a tough way?
It's you know, it's a big gap between, you know, the money they earn and the money we earn at the British level. But I guess that all comes with profiling, you know. A lot of the social media has to play with that. And to be honest, not for them, actually. For them, it's actually their career. They've had it hard. Canelo's been a professional 15 years. Do you know what I mean? He didn't just start earning the money he's earning now. Like he's engraved his name in the sport, same as Golovkin. Golovkin's engraved his name in the sport. They're multiple time world champions. Canelo's a multiple weight world champion. They've earned it. So, you know, those are the guys I look at, and I look at their resumes, and they fought tough guys to get to where they are, and they deserve every penny they get.
So, what about the YouTubers earning large amounts of money for their events then?
You know what? I can't really say too much about that because they've earned that in a different field.
Yeah,
they've earned that through the way they've built their fan base. So initially, it's their fan base that's paying for them to watch them box or whatever it is they're doing.
Are they good for our sport though, Denzel?
Are they good for our sport? They can bring eyes to our sport. It's not good to have too much of it because then the sport can seem a mimic or a joke or whatever. But at the same time, it is entertaining. As long as we know that that's not real boxing and there is real boxing, then it's good. But I think real boxers need to step up and start having fights to make real boxing entertaining and not, you know, everyone likes to see two guys in the street that don't know how to fight having a fight. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, if you walked outside the pub and you saw two guys that thought they could fight having a fight, you'd be interested. But then you watch great guys like, you know, let's say Floyd Mayweather, Andre Ward, and even recently now Shakur Stevenson. Us as boxing, let's say, spectators or experts, you know, we're fast to call them boring because they're not as exciting. And if we're going to label them boring, we're setting out a stereotype for those type of fighters that are so great because everything's one sided.
You've got to cultivate the appreciation of them, haven't you?
Yeah, exactly. We've got to appreciate the skill and explain to the public that don't understand what's going on, what they're doing, rather than calling them boring and making the public not want to watch them and maybe want to watch, you know, Jake Paul or KSI fight because they don't know what they're doing and it's more entertaining.
Right. Jake Paul and Anderson Silva. Now you're aware of Anderson Silva, yeah?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
The great UFC fighter, Brazilian, brilliant knockout artist. What do you make of Jake Paul and Anderson Silva fighting then?
I think it's a good way for Jake Paul to say I'm fighting a real fighter because, you know, Anderson Silva beat Julio Chavez Jr. So, you know, it makes it seem like, I'm fighting a real fighter. But I think Anderson Silva is still dangerous. I think he's one of them guys. He's just a fighting man. He'd fight forever if he could. Do you know what I mean? He's just one of those guys that Ben Hopkins fought to was 50 and he was still won fights here and there. But I think he's still dangerous. But it's still not going to give Jake Paul the credit he deserves. And I still don't think he should be ranked. And I think Jake Paul being ranked is what kills the sport. Being disrespectful.
Completely agree.
That's what kills the sport. If you're going to have fun with what you're doing, have fun with it on your side of things. Let your people that, you know, appreciate it, that are fans of what you do, buy into it. But when you bring it to our world and guys that have been fighting years just to be ranked and get a shot at a world title, and this guy comes because of all the money he generates, you put him in a top 5 or top 15 or whatever it is, a governing body, that's not fair in my eyes. He doesn't even have a real weight class.
I think you nailed that, Denzel. I think you've absolutely nailed that.
Nailed it.
Listen, before we let you go, obviously you've now defended the Lonsdale belt.
Yes.
To win it outright, maybe a couple more defences. What is the plan? Because I know that you've obviously got aspirations of maybe European titles, Commonwealth titles, and then, of course, at some point, moving into that world level. What's the immediate plan next, mate?
The immediate plan right now...
Apart from going back to dinner.
definitely go back to dinner. But, you know me already, I take a week off and I'm back in the gym. Martin ain't going to, bother me or stress me with loads of information. He'll wait till... You know, I'll have my fun. I've cleared my head, and then when I want to know, you let me know. Okay, look, listen, this is what we got planned. Denz, like, what way do you want to move? Like, obviously, I'll have an input as well. Let me know. Look, these are the options, and then we choose from there. If I think I need to defend it one more time, and if that's the case,
yeah,
I want to get out one more time this year anyway.
Brilliant.
And if you know, it can be that for me to keep it.
It's a good looking belt, isn't it? It's a good looking belt, man.
It's a lovely looking belt, and it makes it more enticing when you know you've got one more defense. When there's three defenses, it's easy to be like, that's long, I want to move on. But you got one more defense, it's like, why not? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I like that. Listen, Frank last night was talking maybe possibility of 2023, you and Hamza Shiraz maybe having a fight. Is that something that is attractive for you?
Yeah, why not? He's a middleweight, he's in my division. He's got a WBC silver, which puts him top five in them rankings. That's a
Good with the Europeans as well. Yeah, so it's a good European ranking with the WBC too.
Yeah, exactly. Good European ranking. But that's a, very, very close step to, world title, world honours and being in that space. So that's a good fight. At first, when they mentioned it to me, I was like, yeah, I'm game. But there was nothing to really get gained from it from my side.
Of
but
course.
Now there is a bit more. And it's building up nicely. Everyone keeps mentioning it. So that could be a big, arena fight at some point. Don't know. Can't say how much it will feel. I'm not going to like. It's Fury
mate,
Joshua.
It's a great fight.
It's a good fight, and it's a good domestic fight, and I think we'll put on a show. But wherever it is, I think it'll be a big fight, and hopefully it's one of them Fight of the Year contenders.
Sticking with middleweights, Nathan Heaney fights this weekend in Manchester on the undercard of Joyce Parker. It's a big step up as he takes on the former European title challenger in Jack Flatley, a guy from the local area as well. An away day for Nathan Heaney. So we got him on the show to talk about it.
Hey, up me ducks, hey up. feeling really good, mate. And buzzing for next week. Obviously 7 days today, and yeah, I can't wait.
What's the mentality like of having an away day? Listen, you've obviously fought outside of Stoke on several occasions, but it normally feels like a Nathan Heaney home fight. This one, you're fighting a guy from the local area of Manchester. He's a Bolton boy, he's Flatley. He'll have a few fans in there. I know that you've done a few away tickets. Does it feel like a little bit of a football away day for you?
100%. I mean, I think he probably lives 13 miles away from the venue, so I am essentially fighting in his back garden. So even though I've got over 1,500 travelling from Stoke and around the UK to support me, I am fighting in someone's backyard. And who knows, half the arena could be against me because he's from the Greater Manchester area. So it makes it exciting because I have only really had the crowd going one way with me as opposed to having somebody else with a massive crowd with them. So it does make it a bit more exciting in that regard.
I was going to say, does that get the juices flowing? Does that excite you?
Oh, 100%, because it just adds to the drama of the show. And just, if he's landing good shots and obviously they go up, his crowd go up, and then obviously I land the shots, then my crowd will go up. It's going to make for a really, really special fight, I think.
Regarding level of opponent as well, obviously Jack's challenged at European level previously. He's former English champion too. So therefore, level of opponent, it's a nice step up in the right direction for yourself. Again, you've just mentioned that it's away from home. There's a lot of different challenges that are facing you next Saturday, as well as obviously a lot of eyes around the world that'll be watching it because of what we're expecting in the main event.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a step up. Jack Flatley is a very, very, very good fighter. Had an established pedigree as an amateur as well, an ABA finalist. He's relentless in what he does. He's very fit. Like, he's dedicated to the sport. If there's one fighter that is going to give everything in the build-up to a fight, it's going to be Jack. So I know everything that I've been doing is in preparation for someone like that because, he's got everything to obviously for me as a step up and if I do the wrong things, to obviously beat me. So, I've got to be really switched on with everything and just see how it goes.
I'm looking forward to the rendition of Delilah as you come in.
Because, I knew that's where you were going.
No, because, like, you know...
You love it. You get out of your seat. Every time he makes a ring walk, you're out your seat, you enjoying yourself.
It's not unusual, is it? There's something about Nathan. When those fans travel the 60 miles from Stoke to central Manchester... And obviously you're the hitman, you're the new hitman of Manchester. Ricky will be there, Ricky Hatton will be there as well. Is Amanda Serrano on the card now as well or not? Have I got
on this
that
one?
Wrong? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Amanda, so is she co-main? Are you just before Amanda Serrano and then the heavyweights?
I honestly don't know.
Okay,
I'm assuming I should be one of the very last ones.
Well, that the arena will be pretty much full by then,
mate. And fans will fill the arena.
And exactly. There's two. As you said, there's 1,500 coming. There's more from around the country coming. We know Nathan because we were at that amazing broadcast during lockdown when 800 people were allowed. Remember, and the roof was coming off the Telford Centre that night, and you were extraordinary, and you boxed brilliantly that night, and it was kind of a coming of age moment in your career, I think, in many ways, because it was that celebration where we were back in boxing. It wasn't behind closed doors anymore, and I think you grew that night, didn't you? I think Tommy Fury was on the card as well. You grew that night, if that's fair to say, Nathan.
Yeah, absolutely, and it certainly put eyes on me from around the UK. One, obviously, my performance, because I stopped him in the third round. Mm. Granted, the opponent wasn't all that, to be fair, but it was what I was given at the time. I didn't really have much choice, and then obviously I put the performance on. But I think it was because we had that 2 years or a year and a half, whatever it was, where no one could go to any sport events.
Exactly,
and ours was basically the first one back. So I had 600 that went to me to Telford because I could only get 600 tickets. I couldn't get any more. But the noise they made, it just reminded people of what sport was all about in regards to atmosphere and the electricity, obviously, and obviously the kind of support that they give me. So, yeah, it was coming of age for everything in terms of, obviously, my performance, putting me on the UK stage, and then, obviously, my supporters as well. And then, obviously, it's grown a lot since then. But it was a great night, that one.
Listen, right, you've had a big year already, mate, yeah, because we know that you made an honest woman of your good lady. Now, first and foremost, Stag Do, Vegas. Are you allowed to tell us any stories that happened out there or not?
Yeah, out to be fair, I was very subdued over in Vegas.
Get out, man. I'm not having it.
No, I was. I hardly gambled. I had a couple of drinks on the first night. But it, to be fair, it was incredible. It was an amazing place. Very expensive, though.
Yeah.
The reason I didn't drink is because it was like $35 for a pint. So I was like, But it was great over there. And, I did try to go over to Joe Juicy's gym while I was there, but we never got back to the DM, so he didn't reply until about a week later. I was like, I'm back now, Joe, but a bit too late, man.
So that happens. You get back. You obviously have the wedding. Now, she's waiting for honeymoon, pal. You've had to put it on hold because of the camp, haven't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Boxing, as Louise says, boxing ruins my life. But it doesn't. It's great. But, you know, it doesn't. She doesn't say that at all. But boxing takes up a lot of things. And obviously, yeah, the honeymoon actually put on hold. I would have loved to have gone straight away for us to go away when we got married 7 or 8 weeks ago. But it is what it is. It's just Louise backs me all the way. And she's an incredible wife and an incredible partner. So, yeah, it's just one of them. Well, I was originally going to book it for like the 2nd of December, but then I saw that there might be a certain date.
You need to get on that card, son. You need to be getting on that one.
So I've said, listen, Louise, just give me a sec.
do you fancy your honeymoon in South Wales? That's what you need, lad. There you go.
Yeah, that's what we'll do. So, Louise will back me whatever I need to do.
But how important is that? Because we don't often talk about it enough. The support mechanisms that fighters go through. It's a very lonely sport. You're spending a lot of time in camp. You're spending money on your camps. You're away from family. Obviously, you've got young family as well. You've just got married and what have you. There's real life pressures in fighters' lives. And it's so important to have that support at home in order to keep that balance, to keep normal life ticking, in order for you to attempt to fulfil your dreams.
Yeah, 100%. They've got to back it all the way. I mean, I'm very fortunate that, obviously, I'm a full-time fighter now, and my coach, Steve Woodvine, is one of the best coaches in the country. he's a Stoke-born lad, so I haven't got far to travel. It's not like I've got to go miles up to London or wherever these boys have to travel to. So I get to see my girls growing up a lot more than what I ever could have wished before, and that's something that's great about what boxing's given to me. But yeah, Louise, like even tonight, we had to go through all the... Obviously, I've sold all my tickets, and I've got all the money, and Louise's like, right, we need to go through all the allocations now to make sure that you have made no mistakes.
She's in charge of admin. She's the admin.
Yeah, well, she knows. If she's in charge with me doing it alongside me, it's going to be fine. But I'd say the last 80 tickets I've organised, like I've been ordered to cinema, and she's thinking, oh my goodness, I shouldn't be letting him do this. Takes too many punches anyway. So it's yeah, but fortunately, it's bang on.
Now, of course, at the weekend, it was Canelo Triple G. I'm not going to spoil the result of the fight for you, just in case you've not caught up with it, but come on. If you're a fight fan, you should have been all over that at the weekend. It kind of inspired a conversation about our favourite trilogies of all time. This happened on Saturday night, and this is what me and Gareth had to say. A little bit closer to home, to be sat ringside for every single one of Fury Wilder was an absolute treat, because if you look at that as a trilogy, every single fight has something in it that you take away and go, wow, that was absolutely top draw.
Well, you're wearing the Arturo Gatti versus Mickey Ward trilogy hoodie.
I am.
Tonight, looking resplendent. That has to go in there. Was two of those three fights, so I've got to mention those.
Which one were you at? Were you at the two Arturo Gatti wins? Or?
Let me think about who was on the card. I think Audley Harrison was on one of them. Am I right? Am I losing my mind? Was one in Atlantic City? I'm losing my mind here. I need to look it up.
The second one was in Atlantic. The second and third were in Atlantic City.
Yeah,
And the first one was in Yunkersville.
Oh, what was the date of that?
May 18th, 2002, followed by November 23rd, 2002, and June 7th, 2003.
Well, Audley Harrison turned pro. You are. Audley Harrison turned pro after the Australia Olympics in 2000. So
there you go.
Probably the first one.
So you went to Atlantic City, so you went to the second or the third?
Two and three. I don't think I was at Uncasville. But okay. I can't remember now. I need to look it up.
The two you were at, Arturo Gatti won.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes.
There you go.
But what was amazing about those fights?
Yep.
What is actually amazing about those fights is that they literally took turns to hit each other.
I have a go. Yeah.
It was just
it was great.
Like a joy of masochism from both of them. Like a weird, and they never looked out. When they did, they just rebounded. It's like a cartoon figure that gets crushed and squashed flat, and then kind of like is inflated again. It was extraordinary. I've got to mention, because I think we're both at all three of them. You've got to mention Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury trilogy in there, because I think when you've been at them, they're even more special.
Of course, yeah.
You know.
Of course. Did you do any of the Barrera Morales fights?
No.
My word.
They were extraordinary. They were special, I've seen all three.
Yes, absolutely. Incredibly special. I think, listen, the number one, without any shadow of a doubt, anybody that's arguing with us about this, come on, let's get straight about it. We're talking about the fight of the century to start it off, and the thriller in Manila to finish it all off. Yeah. It is, of course, Ali Frazier. They are as good as it gets. And even just to listen to both of those gentlemen when they did in the immediate aftermath of the final one with the thriller in Manila, for them both to say, listen, his team pulled him out seconds before I was about to pull myself out at the end of the 14th round. Just outstanding, outstanding action.
And of all of those, they were, of the ones we've mentioned, these are 15-round fights,
yes.
Remember?
Yes.
So obviously the last one was stopped with Frazier, Ali saying that's the closest to death I've ever felt.
Yes.
You know, in that. I mean, two names that we talked about it earlier in the show. It's weird how Golovkin and Canelo tonight don't like each other, but their names will be forever linked. I mean, I remember doing an interview with Joe Frazier before he passed and before Muhammad Ali passed, saying, you know, I know which one's going to heaven, I know which one's going to hell. And he never that the rivalry was so strong and he felt so insulted by Muhammad Ali, who was only ever joking and selling a fight, that he could never forgive him for it. And in a weird way, I think that resentment and spitefulness exists between, to put a cap on it tonight, between Canelo and Golovkin. And I don't think they'll ever be friends.
No. I listened to some of their interviews this week. I think from a Gennady Golovkin point of view, he, I don't think, has too much nastiness or animosity towards Canelo Alvarez. I think it's more so the other way around, where Canelo Alvarez really does have some type of dislike for Gennady Golovkin. But I hope in some way, shape or form they can put that ghost to rest tonight, because the fact is, we're talking about two of the best fighters of their generation. There's absolutely no doubt about that. I've been making content all week on these two guys, going back, and I've watched all 24 rounds again. And even though we can all argue about how the first one goes or how the second one goes, there is absolutely no doubt that every single round in this fight is competitive. Every single one of those 24 phases is competitive. Canelo has moments, Triple G has moments, and it's just the very best of the best. High-level chess. You go, I go. It's brilliant to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can't... That's why you can't second guess this fight. They are so adept at being in the office, boxing to discrete 3-minute rounds, and cleverly working their way through it and putting behind them what happened in the last round. Gennady Golovkin, we think, may be stopped by a body shot late. That's the best bet in this fight, but he will probably survive 12 rounds even if he's in trouble.
So there you have it. Thank you very much for listening to us. Don't forget, we are live from the Manchester Arena this weekend as we bring you live exclusive commentary on TalkSport for Joyce versus Parker. With it being on the radio, it's free as well. No need to be paying those pay-per-view prices. Just letting you know. Anyway, come and join us for that, and also come and join us next Monday for more podcast action. You can subscribe to us on iTunes or via the TalkSport website. We are the home of boxing.
Hey, Orlando. Tired of battling the mighty pollen? We've got your back. Aspire Allergy and Sinus offers lasting allergy relief so you can chuck those temporary fixes and savor that sweet, sweet taste of victory over pollen. With same-day results and tailor-made treatment plans, we've turned the tables on allergies. Aspire patients enjoy relief that lasts for years. Schedule your appointment today at aspireallergy.com. Turn your daily sneeze-a-thon into a breeze with Aspire Allergy and Sinus. Go to aspireallergy.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.